We have a stacked show today. Absolutely friggin' stacked. But you know what? What we always got to do first is say hello to Tony friggin' Nodo. What's up, Tony? How are you doing today, my friend?
I'm doing good. Day was, so far. But now that I'm sitting with you, it's amazing. And this show is so good, I just might stick around for the entire 30 minutes.
I appreciate that. I hope you do, because we have three amazing guests today. Yeah. We're going to talk capital deployment. We're going to talk software and ancillary and performance of a specific company. Actually, some big news this morning for that company today. We're going to start with Posabit, OTCQX listed, POSAF. We're going to have Bespoke Financial. We're going to have Vicente Cederberg. We have a stacked show. So here's what I want to do, Tony. I'm directing us as we go.
Okay.
I want you to give us 3 minutes of what people should head after the show to benzinga.com/cannabis to look for. What should we be focusing on today news-wise? For me, when I did my podcast this morning, there was a ton of cool like new medical studies that came out and that were launched. But really? What have you seen over the course of the day that you think our viewers should keep an eye on?
There's so many items, but I want to hear about this. Like what study caught your attention?
Oh, well, so let's start with, I think it was the Journal of Cannabis Medicine, looked at over 1,800 patient cases. And they were all 18 years or older. So, you know, everybody calm down. So basically all these cases of COVID-19 and does cannabis use help suppress the effects of it on your body? And they found very positive data. Now, a much larger study is probably needed, and they admit that in the article. So again, everybody calm down. But what they said, What they said is cannabis is an immunomodulator. And immunomodulatory agents from the National Cancer Institute are known to suppress and fight against cancer infections and other diseases. So they are looking at its effects at suppressing and beating out COVID-19, just cannabis use in general. So that was super interesting. And the other one, they're launching a study at the King's College of London, one of the largest privately held independent studies ever of over 6,000 patients studying the biological as well as environmental effects of cannabis use on the brain.
That is a lot to unpack. Yes, but fascinating.
I mean, it's exciting, man. We need this. We need the R&D. In the newsletter today, I talked about pharmaceutical companies. You know, you guys need to keep an eye on this because the R&D that companies like Lexaria, like Dimitrix, like InMed, like Zynerba, like Shackelford, like they're all doing, the research and development that they're doing is going to be so important to actually increasing the access to cannabis.
Super important. Super. Absolutely. I'm so glad you included that in your newsletter.
I did. You should read it.
I will.
You work for Benzinga. You should read it.
Well, I did. I will admit, because, you know, all cards on the table, did not read it today. But I'm curious, did you happen to include our exclusive news item that we have on benzinga.com/cannabis?
Well, I'm not going to tell you because you didn't read it, and that's your fault. But so you can tell our audience about it.
We interviewed a cannabis company that specializes in a cannabis robot. His name is Carl Palm. He's the CEO of Boundless Robotics. The robot is called Anabato. And the pitch is that you can grow cannabis where legal in your state with just the touch of a button in the comfort of your very own home. And it just goes to show just how far we've come in robotics and artificial intelligence, that of course they can complete a lot of your boring household tasks, but including the fun ones, like growing a cannabis plant.
I mean, are you just going to completely bypass the need for home grow legislation here? Like, are we just going to completely skate over that?
Well, the robot is it's in Massachusetts, and I believe it's legal there. So that's where I started, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. And so it's in that New England area, which is, you know, those folks are – They have robots growing weed in their living rooms.
Well, all I can say is Floridians are not happy with you right now.
sorry, Floridians. I don't think I would get along with a lot of Floridians anyway. So, well,
sorry, well, we're gonna make you keep that under wraps in terms of any subcategories there. Anyway, so let's do this. Let's dive in because we have three amazing industry thought leaders today. We're gonna dive into their insights, and we're not gonna rush them. We're gonna get their all cards on the table here, but we're gonna start with who we said earlier, Ryan Hamlin, CEO of Possibit. You're going to be here to talk about his earnings, talk about the uplisting. Let's do this, Aaron. Let's get started strong.
Awesome.
It's like positive vibes music, you know? Ryan, what's up, man? Good to have you back on. How are you?
Yeah, good to be back on, guys. Thank you.
It's been a bit. You know, honestly, I want to start with the news today. It must be exciting to see your company continually take steps forward. There's been a ton of expansion news in the new states this year. I followed you guys very closely, and I'm excited for you. But let's start with specifically what it means to you to head to the OTCQX.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was kind of a three-banger the last 4 days. We started with a huge announcement of a $20 million partnership deal. For a large technology company who I can't name because that's confidential, but
you can break the news here, man. I'm just saying
when you're ready.
Is licensing our source code for our point of sale, which is amazing. So that's 4 years, 20 million guaranteed. And then we had our Q2 earnings come out on Thursday, which were great. We increased revenue Q1 to Q2 over $2 million. So that was a 29% growth quarter over quarter. And then year over year, 66%. So while a lot of companies, as we know in this space, are struggling right now, I don't want to, just beat our own or, tout our own horn here. But it's just we continue to execute and grew the company. And we're tracking to $40 million this year in revenue, which is awesome. But yeah, and then we announced yesterday the move on the OTC up to the QX. So, the QX was great for us. It was kind of the last final step before we make the big jump to NASDAQ, hopefully, assuming, NASDAQ is opens their perspective of companies like ours and why it's important for us to be on the NASDAQ.
But, money moving.
We're excited. It's been a crazy week of announcements, but all good things for Possibit. So I'm pretty jacked up and excited.
Can you go on vacation now?
Hey, I'm a CEO. You don't go on vacation.
I hear you there, man. You run a company. So I got to follow up here and then I'll let Tony dive in.
Sure,
And first of all, toot your own horn, dude. Anybody who can survive this market in cannabis deserves to toot their own horn. So I want to dive into something that your company pointed out in your press release. Raises low end of full year 2022 gross profit guidance. You didn't have to do that. Obviously, that's something that I'm sure you're proud to do and happy that you can do, but of course risky in this market. Yes. So you're confident that your continued expansion is going to continue into the rest of the year, it seems.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I think our investors, they value obviously top line revenue growth, but more and more, especially given the industry climate, getting to EBITDA profitability is important and it's on the minds of our investors. And so we wanted to come out and not only say, hey, our gross profit margins are getting better and, we feel stronger about our guidance, but we also stated in the earnings that we're going to be EBITDA profitable next year. So big step for us to kind of get back on that EBITDA profitability. We do think, and well, we see the line straight ahead for the next 6 months or to finish off Q3 and Q4 that, gave us the strength to confirm our guidance of $40 million and that gross profit margin dollar increase to $9.5 million. We announced a large deal with an MSO that we announced that in our earnings call as well. They're in 7 states, they have 60 locations. That's beginning a rollout literally this week. So we're excited to have that. And so when you start to look at that big MSO, our pipeline of 100 closed deals ready to go live, plus another 200 in the pipeline, we feel very confident that hitting that end of year goal of $40 million and $9.5 to $10 million on gross profit is very doable.
What were you looking for in a partner? So you're tight-lipped on this specific MSO, but give us an idea as to what you were looking for and why this MSO was the perfect partner for you at this time.
Yeah, I mean, I think like anybody in this industry, I mean, when you can land the big name MSOs, it's a statement of credibility because they, you know, they take the selection of who they go with very, very seriously. And so the rigor they go through to select a company like us is one of the things you just kind of, you know, you wear proudly, like, okay, you know, not only did we go through the evaluation process, but they selected us. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, obviously, when you land 60 locations at once, that has a massive impact versus, you know, a set of mom and pop shops in Oklahoma. Love our friends in Oklahoma, but, you know, just to be brutally honest, like Oklahoma single stores don't bring in a whole lot of revenue compared to these giant MSOs. So mm-hmm. we really made a focus for our sales team to go after and hunt those MSOs because they add big chunks of revenue.
Mm.
That's really cool. Yeah. So I'm just kind of looking ahead. You know, you mentioned NASDAQ, right? You mentioned obviously the goal for any tech company is probably to hit NASDAQ. In that mindset, where do you feel as the CEO of this company you need to be for that to happen?
Well, the good news is if we were not in the cannabis industry today, we would meet all of the NASDAQ requirements. So we've already met all the net worth requirements, perfect. Everything that they're, you know, we've checked the boxes. Right now, it just comes down to, you know, as it's still federally legal, even though we're not plant touching, we're involved in the payment. And because we're involved in the payment, that becomes kind of the sticky issue with NASDAQ. So, you know, we're educating them and we're working with them to, you know, help them understand that we're just a software. I mean, we're a software company. We happen to work in the cannabis industry, but we build great, innovative, scalable software. And so, yeah, that's what, you know, our goal is make sure we've continued to check the boxes for NASDAQ. And then when things either open up with safe banking, if there is the capital market language that is included, hey, that's great. Cause then that's kind of the fast pass to get us there. If not, we'll keep working with them and hopefully we'll get to a point where even before legalization that we're allowed to uplist the NASDAQ. Cause honestly, we just need, you know, we're a US company. We trade in Canada. We're obviously on the OTC now on QX, but you know, you look at our revenue, 40 million, we're trading at about 2.5 times our revenue. That's just crazy. Like there's not many companies right now that, you know, at 100 million market cap and we're doing 40 million in sales that the stock is kind of sitting where it is. It's a very frustrating as a CEO because we need to have more volume. We need to have more investors, more eyeballs on the stock. And it's really difficult when you're a Canadian traded company. And the OTC is great, but you know, NASDAQ is where, you know, NASDAQ's a game changer for us, right? And we know that opens up every window for our US investors and the volumes will go up and then that's good for everybody.
Okay, I mean,
you go ahead. Sorry.
No, Tony, you first, my friend. I don't want to. Well,
how do you think the Safe Banking Act is going to unfold? Are you following it closely? And what are your hopes for the fall as we get closer to election day here in the States?
Yeah. I mean, certainly all of us in the industry and we follow very closely. I would love to tell you that I'm optimistic, but you just have to kind of look at the history of this bill. And unfortunately, you know, too many times there's been a lot of hope and then it just drops out. So
six times, to be exact.
Yeah, exactly. Six times. My heart has been broken. No, I'll just be candid. I don't think it will pass before the midterms. I think maybe something will pass before the end of the year, but I'm not a real big betting person, but if I was, I probably bet against it even happening before the end of the year. I just don't see a path getting us there with everything else going on, unfortunately, in our economy and in our country. I think this one might be pushed a little bit farther back. And you know, but if it does, to your first question, I mean, the key language, you know, that we would like to see is companies like ours being able to list on the capital markets and being able to uplist to a NASDAQ. I mean, that's really important to us. Of course, safe banking is important and we want more bank, you know, more of the FDIC insured banks to be able to bank this industry. But, you know, ironically, it's called the Safe Banking Bill, but there's over 700 banks in the United States currently banking cannabis. So banking is this weird thing where it's called safe banking, but it's not really a banking problem, right? I mean, if you're a cannabis business today, there are credit unions and state banks that are banking you.
Right.
What's really important is when you read the bill, it's things like, hey, letting companies like ours get onto the capital markets. You know, what do we do about incarceration and all these people that have been put in prison now? Like, that's the real meat of this. And so ironically, I tell people sometimes, like, why do you even call it safe banking? It's not really safe banking. Like,
they put so much stock into the names of things. Like, even Build Back Better wasn't good enough. It was too much for people.
Awesome. So Ryan, let's end here, my friend. I was going to ask you about the state of, you know, tech and cannabis on the NASDAQ, and it's not been great over the past month or two, but I'd rather go for the cannabis industry at large.
Yeah.
When it comes to technology, this is a conversation that we'll be hosting at our event in a couple of weeks, but where is technology in this industry? Let's just keep it CPG wise here in retail, in the segment that you work in.
Yep.
How do we compare to regulated industries and in quote unquote normal industries? Is tech on par? Is it ahead, or do we have a ways to go to catch up?
I would say tech's behind. I would categorize this as we're in our second wave of innovation. So the first wave of innovation was just getting actual software in the market, you know, the BioTracks of the world, you know, where you could just basically track seed to sale. You know, it's a client server environment. It's not necessarily the best technology, but it got the job done. Now you're into the second wave, which everything's, you know, for the most part, cloud-based. You got a little bit better innovation. You got more rapid innovation because everything is cloud-based. You're starting to see some of the common things that you would expect in a retail environment that you've enjoyed for a long time, like, you know, the loyalty programs and all that stuff starting to now come in and you know, they're part of this wave. The third wave is going to be really interesting. And I think we kind of, the technology of this third wave will probably be starting to enter into next year. And that's really looking at a lot of consolidation. We see, you know, in a tough industry like now, a lot of these smaller technology companies are going to really struggle because there's just not enough revenue. Like when you look at dispensaries, call it between 9,000 and 9,500 dispensaries, it's going to be very difficult for individual niche technology providers to survive. So now you're going to start to see bigger companies like ourselves and others come together and bring the full suite of services and monetize that. And so I think that's the next wave. And it's not, we're probably even in it right now. I mean, we're starting in, and I think the drop in, you know, the industry as a whole, cannabis, and then the economy is putting everything on fast forward for that consolidation to happen faster than probably we would have expected.
Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much for being here, man. Very insightful chat. Congrats on all the announcements over the last week. Take a breath, grab some coffee or some bourbon, whatever you want to do to celebrate. Yeah, maybe a pre-roll. Perfect. You're on my lane there, man. Thank you again for joining
Guys. Ryan. Thanks for having me.
All right. Be well, man. Awesome. Congrats to him, man. They have been outperforming what seems to be the overall tech market in cannabis. So exciting to see them continue to take steps forward.
Yeah. And those last comments about consolidation in the industry, that's in line with what we're seeing on the news team. There's certainly an anticipation of more M&A over the next few months and into 2023.
Amen. Jacob, welcome in. Bobby, thank you all for tuning in. Really appreciate it. Live, if you're not watching this live on YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, on Benzinga Cannabis or Benzinga, you can always catch us on Apple, Spotify, all your major podcasting platforms. With that, we're going to take a turn to the legal sector of cannabis, and we're about to get schooled, Tony Noto, by Brian Vicente, leading partner, founding partner of Vicente Cederberg. I don't know if you saw that, Brian, but I just saw Tony's face when I said we're about to get schooled.
I was nervous.
Tony's like, I don't know how I feel about this anymore. I'm about to hop off.
Well, I would prefer to be lawyered. If you're on the legal side, lawyer me.
School's in session, Tony.
School's in session. Right. I'll try not to flunk.
Well played, Brian. What's up, man? Tell us, Apache, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful, guys. Yeah, it's great to be on with you and, you know, just to be part of this incredible movement. You know, we're now up to almost 100 staff coast to coast, and all we do is cannabis law and policy, man. So we're just thrilled to be participating in this movement.
How long you been doing it?
So I've been doing it since 2004, full time, man, which makes me like, you know, I had a full head of hair and all that. So I've been doing it. I'm like a dinosaur. You know, we've kind of grown as the industry has grown, and have been, you know, honored to play a part in writing a lot of the laws and regulations.
I got one more follow-up for you before Tony jumps in. What did law for cannabis look like in 2004? What were you doing? What did you do in court in 2004 for cannabis?
Yeah, it was funny. I mean, my law school advisor said it was career suicide, right, to go into cannabis law. And if there really wasn't a field at that time, so of cannabis business law. So basically it was criminal defense, or it was me suing the state to try to broaden medical marijuana patient rights. So civil work and some criminal defense work.
I'm not going to get you to sue us.
What over the years has surprised you the most about the law aspect of cannabis? And yeah, that's what I'm curious. Like, were you able to sort of make any wise predictions, and were you surprised by certain things and how things unfolded?
Sure. Yeah. So when I started working on this, I mean, cannabis has been functionally illegal for 100 years in our country. So, you know, we were banging away trying to change people's hearts and minds. And I always felt if you could just educate people on the fact that cannabis is safer than alcohol, it's not this, you know, devil's lettuce you were taught in school, that actually helps people and produce jobs, that the public would come on board. And fortunately, I was, you know, one of the main proponents that legalized marijuana in Colorado, and we were able to show the world that there was an alternative to prohibition. And, you know, I was happily surprised when the feds didn't come and raid us and shut us down after that law passed. But then fortunately, now we're at a place where there's 19 states with legalized marijuana. We got Canada, we got Uruguay, you know, Germany's got to be next. I mean, things are really, we're moving into just a post-prohibition era. And yeah, that's pretty neat.
Do you work internationally, or are you centric to the U.S.?
You know, it's funny. I would say like 95% of my work has always been domestic. But, you know, after we legalized cannabis in Colorado, like our phones kept ringing from international folks. Like, we got a voicemail from the president of Mexico. You know, just people saying, oh, my God, like, I can't believe you guys did it. And so, you know, I've been an advisor to like Uruguay. They're actually the first country to come on board with adult use legalization. And we get a lot of calls from across the globe with people saying, you know, not positive they want to do the Colorado model, but want to hear about alternatives to prohibition for their country.
Oh, you lead me with a good question, but Tony, you first.
Well, I want to just get his thoughts. You know, this could be something that we could hopefully spin out into a separate piece, Brian, because one thing that we're always following is how the law is so different from state to state. And you look at a place like South Dakota, for example, where they found this loophole in the law to discount what the voters wanted in terms of legal cannabis. Just want to get your thoughts on that, because, you know, there are other situations not like that, but, you know, other situations in other states where the law is just so against what the folks are getting signatures for and pushing along kind of legislation and getting it on the ballot.
Yeah, this has been fascinating. I mean, you know, I've been involved in kind of changing marijuana laws for almost 20 years. And our strategy has been simple. Like, if we can just, it's like a ground up strategy. If we can change enough state laws, we'll force the feds to eventually change their crazy policies on cannabis. And we've had a ton of success over the years, right? We've flipped a bunch of these ballot initiative states and turned them our way. And you know, along that path, public support from Alaska to Alabama for cannabis has become overwhelmingly positive, right? So really all we have to do is get on the ballot. Now, the problem is the prohibitionists are organized, and their current strategy, as you referenced, Tony, is to destroy direct democracy, like to prevent voters from voting on this because they know they won't win. So we're seeing legal attacks in South Dakota. We're seeing one in Arizona currently.
Nebraska today.
Nebraska, yeah. So it's really rough. And, you know, we are involved in some of the defenses of these states. And they're saying, one, either you didn't gather signatures correctly, or two, that the law as written is too confusing for voters to handle, right? And believe it or not, when these cases get up into the state Supreme Courts, in state Supreme Courts in South Dakota, is very conservative. Oklahoma, very conservative. They tend to just kind of go with their ideology, not the law, and say, hey, we're going to prevent the voters from voting on this. So it's disturbing and it's slowing down our progress, but you know, we're going to get there. We'll keep fighting it.
It's interesting. It seems like there's definitely more of a lean from state politics than there is in a bipartisan sense federally. Because it seems like everybody's just fine with it federally. It's just nobody's prioritizing it. It's just the vibe you get. Stateside, it seems more people are just trying to save it for when they need it. But going more into the stateside, you said countries don't want to roll out the Colorado model. That caught me a little bit. What state model do you love? Has rolled out correctly? What state model from your legal expertise has done the industry justice?
Yeah, teach New York a thing or two.
And there's parts of New York that I love. So I believe actually that Colorado, I think, is a nice framework, right? I mean, we did three things. We removed criminal penalties for adults. We set up a regulatory structure where businesses are licensed. And then we legalized hemp. So that structure is strong. But, you know, other states have improved upon it. You know, I mean, Illinois has done some smart stuff around, you know, sort of limiting licenses, but making sure they get in the hands of folks that have been disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. Mm-hmm. New York is trying to take it up another step. There's certain states that have really gotten behind the idea that, you know, employees like New Jersey, right? You can be a police officer and use cannabis outside of work as long as it's not impacting your job, and you can't lose your job. Well, in Colorado, you could. So there are, you know, every state, I mean, that's the joy of it. Every state is tweaking it to kind of a model that works for them. And no one's got it perfect yet, but, you know, it's a hell of a lot better than prohibition.
What are they lacking? Like, what is the one thing that you feel has not been achieved yet? That may be too spontaneous of a question, but is there something that we just haven't done yet?
Well, I think, you know, we're living in a strange world where, you know, I can produce a $1,000, $1,400 pound on the black market or in Oklahoma and ship that to New York and sell it for a hell of a lot more than these regulated stores can produce it for, these regulated growers. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's a strange supply and demand world out there. And it's hard for like micro markets, like states to compete against the black market if people are growing illegally in California or what have you. So we need more clampdown, you know, in the way that there is alcohol regulation and we don't have, you know, bootlegging and things of that nature. But the other kind of hot topic that, you know, I'm just glad people are talking about because they worked 10 years ago or let alone 20 years ago, is the fact that, you know, we need to make sure that those that were disproportionately impacted by the drug war, you know, people of color, et cetera, are getting some of these business licenses, are able to participate in this new market because Lord knows they've suffered under prohibition in a very heavy-handed way. So as I kind of referenced, I mean, Illinois has taken a big step forward. New York's trying to actually have the state pay to build out stores for minorities that want to have cannabis stores. I mean, it's simply remarkable. Which of these will work, you know, in terms of, you know, giving people licenses, low interest loans, paying for build outs, you know, license quotas, like we don't really know, but the important thing is we are trying to figure it out.
Amen. Tony, do you have anything else? Cause I could go on.
I just want to get this question in. You know, we always try to ask people what they predict for the, you know, remainder of the year or the next couple quarters. We're heading into the fall. It's the start of a new month. If you had like your little crystal ball, what trends do you expect to see unfold in the next quarter or two?
Yeah, so I think, I mean, this is a phenomenally exciting quarter coming up for cannabis policy. I would note in October, we're throwing a big party because it's the 10-year anniversary of the Colorado legalization vote.
Hey,
it's exciting. Where the governor is going to be there, Governor Jared Polis of Colorado. They're going to be there with us hand in hand celebrating this along with some other congressmen and dignitaries. And it's our hope that we'll get some press on that. That'll influence the 6 legalization votes coming up in just, you know, November 8th, I think it is. So if we're able to win all those 6 states, if they're on the ballot and we win, I think if they get on the ballot, we'll win. You know, that gets us 25 states that have legal cannabis. And then those Congress people have to go to D.C. and decide, you know, hey, I'm a senator from North Dakota. We just voted to legalize weed. Am I going to show up in D.C. and vote to criminalize my citizens that use cannabis? I mean, you hope the answer is no. And then we'll have that many more votes for something common sense reform like banking and kind of set the groundwork for broader federal legalization. I mean, hopefully in the next year or two.
Awesome. Brian Vicente, founding partner of Vicente Cederberg, one of the most well-known law firms in the space. Thank you for all you do. and have done for this industry, Brian. It's really, really magnificent.
Thanks, guys. Great to be with you.
Appreciate it. We'll have you on again soon, Brian. Thank you again. Tony, man, that was a wealth of legal knowledge. I'm really glad we touched the high level, but I got to be honest, we got to get him back on and go a little deeper because there's a lot more to touch on there. And honestly, I want to get his insights, as we do a lot of people, but I think somebody of his experience can talk about how they've seen the ups and downs in the legal market. And we're in a quote-unquote down right now, but how far down are we? You know, and that type of question. I would love to ask somebody that's been in it since 2004.
Yeah, he's one of those seasoned pros that would have just a wealth of perspective and give you that historic journey. And, that'd be a great show.
Yeah, absolutely. Blind Trader, I wish I could show the world the way cannabis helps me. Love that, man. Please drop your stories in here. We will absolutely read them off. But we appreciate all you all listening and tuning in. With that being said, we're not done yet.
Nope.
You think we're done today at 4:30? You're insane. Tony, we're going to let you unplug and replug your mic in because it's sounding a little robotic-y.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. But as we do that, we're going to bring over George Manchero, CEO and co-founder of Bespoke Financial. Mr. Manchero, how are you? Am I saying that correctly?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Elliot. Hey, Tony. Nice to meet you guys.
You too, my friend. Welcome on to the show. Really happy to have you. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Bespoke has been around for a bit, right? Tell us about you.
Yeah, no, we were founded in June 2018. From day one, our objective was very clear. We wanted to be a debt financing partner, a non-dilutive financing source for operators within the cannabis industry. And so, we've been lending to plant-touching cannabis clients since 2019. And right now, our client roster really just to span the entire supply chain across 15 different states in the U.S.
Now, there are categories of lenders and very proud and loud categories of lenders in this industry. Are you sale-leaseback? Do you like real estate? Do you like BDC? Tell us a little bit about your model.
Yeah. So, we are a licensed commercial lender from the state of California and other markets where we're operating in. I'd say we have always focused on working capital solutions. So our lending is short-term focused. It's secured lending. And the way we think about it is, obviously, if anyone was active in the cannabis space in 2019, you saw, equity investors that previously had helped this entire industry start from the ground up suddenly retreat from the space. And a retreating equity investor base means is that company valuations go lower. So more capital means more dilution and giving up more ownership in your company. For us, we thought having a debt-only solution would be very, very helpful for a lot of these operators who really, if they're building a company, they obviously should have the control and ownership as much as possible without having to sacrifice the growth of the business or new opportunities. And so our lending, we say, helps companies unlock value that's on their balance sheet. Everything you carry in terms of an asset, whether it's, accounts receivable that you're going to collect on or inventory or even, your cannabis license, all of these things have intrinsic value. And so by working with Bespoke, you basically get to access capital that's tied up there and do it in a way that doesn't dictate giving up more control of your business. We don't focus on real estate. That's a fully fleshed out part of the debt financing world for cannabis, I'd say, with lots of operators. And so, for us, we're finding creative solutions. Last thing I'd note is that, there has been definitely an evolution on the technology side for cannabis, but with much more work to do. And so, our latest focus has been how can we bring modern fintech solutions to the cannabis industry in a fully compliant, above the board manner that really does, allow these companies more flexibility and access to financing services that, normally I think most are expecting would have to happen post federal legalization or post safe banking or something like that. So we're very excited.
I mean, we know a really cool payments guy. I think Brian Hamlin, Possibit, if that's ringing a bell.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned.
Let's make that intro. How's this? Is my mic better?
Better. Sound okay. Good, Tony.
I have a question. Let's talk about a little bit about that, about the fintech aspect. You know, what cues are you taking from the fintech industry to bring into cannabis?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, fintech has had a very interesting year universally. You know, I think last year there definitely was a run up, and you know, probably excessive exuberance on the part of investors and on the part of fintechs. You know, in terms of what's been in the headlines recently, as much as there has been a reset of valuations, a sell off in the public companies for sure, definitely challenges in terms of startups that, you know, are reliant on future fundraising. I think this year, the themes of successful fintechs and really what's getting a lot of excitement are companies that do focus on B2B solutions. And, you know, for us, we announced a partnership with Blaze, which is, you know, a POS system that has a very large footprint in many markets, including California. Mm-hmm. And, you know, our offering will basically allow us to offer B2B buy now, pay later. I know for most people, when they think buy now, pay later, they think of the consumer facing Affirms or Klarnas. This year, taking that same service and providing that ability to increase purchasing power to businesses has something that it's something that we've seen become an increasing trend across a variety of industries. And so our partnership with Blaze is really focused on offering that to dispensaries. You know, if they're purchasing inventory from their vendors, you know, obviously there are stated terms and a stated cadence to that order size that they operate under now. But if we go to them and give them, you know, a line of credit where they can now double their PO, triple their PO, pay COD rather than waiting until net 30, that's value accretive for the vendors to the point where, you know, based off of our initial betas and our outreach, you know, vendors are willing to work with their dispensary customers and offer some incentive for them to do that. And so we think of ourselves as coming in, offering liquidity, really enabling a strengthening of that vendor to dispensary relationship. And really, you know, the way we do that is by providing capital, because we can sit on the top of both of these relationships, evaluate the risk and market conditions, and really provide capital to the companies that, you know, justify it based off their operations.
You're basically coming in and giving cannabis a better name.
I think we're definitely not the only ones doing that, but yes, that is part of the mix here.
I mean, it sounds silly, but there are so many issues with paying on time in this industry, because capital is just not liquid enough. And I get it, asset heavy is the way to go for operators specifically, and you're focused on fintech, but you know, I mean, has that always been an issue? Does that need to change for us to see any progress in this industry?
Yeah, I mean, look, any company that goes from zero to one and then beyond is going to have birthing pains and then growing pains. And, you know, there's definitely been a lack of infrastructure or, you know, business practices or methodologies of operating that did work in the medicinal market that no longer work when suddenly you're an adult sales, you know, legalized state with $6 billion in consumer retail, right? So there's a natural evolution of business practices, but yeah, you know, cash flow and, you know, the timeliness of payments, you know, the inception of Bespoke was really motivated by seeing that need in the market, right? And as much as that may have, you know, lessened to some degree, or the pain points have, you know, sort of evolved into being other parts of the supply chain, it's just a function of evolution, right? And so being dynamic, offering new products, making sure we can get our financing to the right customers at the time of need is always going to be top priority for us. And we expect that'll continue to evolve over time as well.
You know, we talked a little bit about the inception of the law firm with the last guest. They said it was basically a way for him to torpedo his career. Did you have that experience when you first got into cannabis? Or because as a lender, a financial advisor, you could have probably gotten involved in any sector. What was it like entering cannabis for the first time?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everything that was said previously was very hashtag relatable for me. You know, prior to co-founding Bespoke, I had what I would say is a very traditional finance career. You know, right after school, I worked at investment banks, Goldman Sachs, and then I left there to go join a large institutional asset management firm called Guggenheim Partners. And, you know, it wasn't so much, you know, necessarily a call to entrepreneurship by itself. Honestly, the fact that it was cannabis was what got me excited. You know, I'm a big believer in the product. I'm a big believer in its potential. I'm a huge proponent of the idea that the war on drugs has just been a giant waste of time and resources with a huge high human cost attached to it. So the exciting opportunity coupled with something that I could fundamentally believe in really was more compelling than taking on, you know, all the exciting challenges of building a business and you know, getting involved in an industry like this. And so, you know, I'd say it really was cannabis that motivated me to make that move. You know, definitely did raise some eyebrows when I did it, but you know, the proof is in the pudding, and you know, I couldn't be happier with, you know, sort of what the last 4 years have looked like.
Nice, very nice. So looking at lenders specifically, the market of lenders in cannabis, a lot of them have gone public over the last year. A lot of them are potentially planning to go public. You know, it's been a good time generally for debt providers because equity sucks right now. But what's your thought on that? I'm not saying tell us you're going public or say anything you can't. I mean, you can if you want. But, you know, I think for me, what's your thought on lenders moving forward? Should you still look at public markets the same, or is it smart for you to remain a private company?
I think that's a very subjective question to each company and what its needs are. You know, I think there's a misconception that the goal of every company is to ultimately IPO. I think it's something everyone should evaluate. But, you know, there's a time and a place in any company's evolution where you don't want the exposure of earnings releases and volatility and, you know, possibly souring retail investors or fast money. You know, there's time where you just need longer term stable capital providers that also do provide a lot of insight. I mean, you know, the venture capital firms of the world, you know, they're not just there to write checks. They're also there to provide assistance to founders and entrepreneurs, provide guidance. You know, let's not go relearn every single lesson that we did with our past five companies. Let's give you a head start here in terms of thinking long term. And that's value that you don't necessarily get with an IPO as much as it may get you, you know, profile and, you know, you may ring the bell at the stock exchange. You know, at the end of the day, the founders and the management teams and the leaders and the board of directors, all of these, you know, people are responsible with deciding what the most appropriate path forward is. And so for us, you know, there are no plans for an IPO anytime soon. You know, we're definitely still growing and building. And like I said, the cannabis industry itself is in a state of constant evolution, regardless of what market you're in. And so, you know, our idea is really just keep, you know, our eyes on the focus. And the focus right now is, again, there's a huge capital need for the cannabis industry. The regulation is not moving any faster than it was before, unfortunately. We can't afford, and the industry can't afford, for everyone to just wait for that to happen. And so we really have to just focus on solving as many problems and adding as much value for the industry and our clients as possible.
Nice. I have one more question, then Tony, I'm going to let you wrap us.
Go ahead.
So same question I posed to Ryan. Where are we in technology for cannabis today? And you said you work with Blaze, a POS, so it can be in the same sector of retail and payments. Are we playing catch up against the clock? Do we have time? An added factor there, but is tech comparable to other industries right now in cannabis?
Yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, I would agree that, you know, there's always room for improvement and, you know, better coverage. That, I mean, even in the non-cannabis tech world, they should be saying the same thing. The idea of bringing new ideas and new solutions is pretty constant. I actually have a slightly more optimistic take on the current state, though, just because I do think cannabis really starting in the last, call it 7 years, 8 years, has allowed the industry to leapfrog a lot of the past history and really just focus and build the industry in the modern tech era. You know, if you think about something like consumer lending, that's been around for probably thousands of years. When the first fintechs came out and started offering online solutions, you basically have to re-educate your target audience about, okay, you don't have to go to the bank to look for a loan anymore. Here's a easier solution, right? We don't have that challenge. There wasn't really any infrastructure here before or past behavior. And so as much as I do think, you know, it's only getting better from a services and a technology side. We also don't have to do a lot of unlearning of past behavior, which I think helps companies really sort of drive their and find their product market fit much faster.
That's interesting, actually. I never thought of it like that. Awesome. Tony, any last questions, my friend?
Well, we talked a little bit about the uptick in M&A. Let's just say, hypothetically, I'm a CEO looking to do a deal. I go to you for financing. What do you tell me? What does that first conversation look like or sound like?
You know, the first conversation is really with me speaking very little, right? We really like hearing from management teams what the game plan is, what the idea is. It gives us insight into just how much analysis they've done on their side. I've said this for quite some time. You know, we obviously have an underwriting process, and, you know, any sort of financial institution has to focus on KYC and you know, screening your clients and customers. But from a credit perspective, usually within one conversation from the management team, we have a pretty good sense of whether these are individuals and a company that we really want to partner with and grow together with, or if it's just not a fit, whether it's because of different priorities or, you know, we don't quite see the vision. Not to say we don't think it's you know, unfeasible, whatever we disagree with, you know, it just doesn't make sense within our own paradigm. And so, you know, for us, just, you know, hearing management teams and understanding the level of thought that's gone into whatever it is that they want to do really does inform a lot of our decision-making process as to whether this makes sense or not. Because at the end of the day, you know, we're not an operator, we're not plane touching. We do get a lot of insight on the industry. We see a lot of different companies, and we get, I think, a very unique perspective on different ideas and different strategies that different companies have tried. That being said, at the end of the day, it's always important to just trust the founders and the team if it makes sense. And so, you know, that would be the starting point of the conversation. It's a
And are you having more of those conversations about consolidation?
We definitely have seen consolidation. We definitely have seen M&A, you know, some for very strategic growth opportunities because it makes sense. Some out of necessity, quite honestly. You know, it's just been a challenging year, especially in the more mature markets. And, you know, at stressed enough situations, any leader has to start thinking about, you know, survival more than growth. But, you know, what I would say is, the good news is it's not all, you know, doom and gloom. I think if you look at the cannabis industry and how it's performed year to date, we probably have been a little spoiled expecting 20% year over year growth, and anything less than that is, you know, a sore disappointment. But if you look at the resiliency of sales and, you know, the resiliency of consumer activity, there's a path there for every company to have success and find its place in the market. And the companies that haven't gotten, that have basically, you know, avoided the overexuberance the most are the ones that tend to have that stability that can really take advantage of opportunities like this.
Awesome. Well, what an interesting point, man. But George, we're at time, man. We have kept everybody a little long, but worth it. Thank you. Really appreciate you coming in. You're actually, I think, one of the first lenders that's had a very big focus into the fintech side of cannabis. So it's really been a pleasure, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, George.
Woo, Tony, three interviews of just industry leaders, man. Holy cow.
I know we kept them long, but we had to get in those questions because it's so important, especially as we look forward to these next couple quarters. What is the landscape going to look like, and is M&A landscape going to shift? And I love talking to those guys about that topic specifically.
Yeah, guys, normally we only have one interview for 30 minutes, maybe two for like 35, 40 minutes. We like to get everybody's full interviews in. So thank you so much for staying with us. And Aaron, correct. That is the correct link, because I'm going to have Aaron Thomas drop a link in the chat. If you're not joining us yet, at least do me your friendly neighborhood cannabis insider host, Elliot Lane, a favor and just click on the link, bzcannabis.com. We have one of the best lineups you will see to date. Yeah. These guys in the industry are MSO leaders. All top five tier one MSOs will be there. We'll have most of your major lenders. I think George is going to join us. Vicente Cederberg is going to join us. We're going to have a ton of tech companies. We're going to have Metric at our event. They don't do investor events. We have Canaccord at our event, partnering with us on this event. We have Neo Stock Exchange. We have the Canadian Stock Exchange. Guys, if you want to learn about capital markets and cannabis, there is no better event than bzcannabis.com. Yeah. Elliot 30. ELLIOT30 is your 30% discount code.
Getting it now.
To grab a ticket. Elliot 30, ELLIOT30 on the Get Tickets page. get a ticket, come say hi. You're going to learn something, I swear. And if you don't, I'm going to bring you on the show and we're going to interview you.
Is that a guarantee?
Guarantee. Although you can't say it. You gotta bring me some legit excuses. If you just say it to get on the show, then I don't know.
There are a few celebrities showing up at this event.
Dude, we just announced Calvin Johnson and Rob Sims for you Lions fans of the NFL. We announced Ricky Williams for you Florida football fans. We announced Vic Mensa for you rap fans. We have David Joyce and Troy Carter for you political advocates out there. We have Mike Tyson and Ric Flair for you athlete. Yes, but we also have every major business leader in the industry that's going to be there. We have MJ Biz speaking at this event. All I'm saying, y'all, is come. And that's it. That's the end of my plea. I don't normally talk that much, but it's coming up. September 12th, we're announcing the first ever Benzinga Cannabis Awards for who the leaders are in this industry. And the 13th and 14th is the event. You can see some of it here on YouTube. And then you can see all of it in person. That being said, Tony, thank you for letting me spiel. Thank you all for listening. Hope you'll join us. Whew, with that being said, I'm done talking. I'm going to go have a Truly.
You earned it, my friend.
You too, dude. Thank you all for tuning in, Tony. Thank you, man.
No problem. Thank you. We'll be right back.